Hello and welcome to an Albany Roar special on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Today we are delighted to welcome a man who played 107 times for the Albion, scoring 18 goals with 33 assists, a man also known as Elliot Bennett. Elliot, thank you so much for joining us here on the Albion Roar. It's been a strange time. How's COVID been for you?
Yeah, it's a lot strange. Thanks for having me on, firstly. I think it's been strange for everyone. The first lockdown was obviously with football stopping and everything was really, really strange for everyone. Not going into training. And in the end, actually, I started to really enjoy time that I was getting that I didn't, you know, you don't normally get playing football, just being present at home around the family all the time, every day. And I really, really enjoyed and it made me, you know, really appreciate what I've got at home and not just, you know, figuring out that I'm a dad and husband and enjoying that side of my life as opposed to just being known as Elliot Bennett plays football. So in ways it's been good and in other ways, you know, I can't wait for everything to get back to normal and people to, you know, especially with football fans being back inside stadiums.
Okay, funny times. Let's talk about your time at the Albion. And funny times for a Wolves player to be going and then changing Wolves for Albion, albeit as the one that wasn't in the Black Country.
So yeah, the better one.
Yeah, the best Albion. So tell us about what it was that enticed you away from Wolverhampton Wanderers to come and join the Albion.
To be honest, at first I was. Nothing against the club, but I was really nervous. I've never lived away from home. I'd never moved out of my area. I'd grown up being at Wolves since the age of 7-8 years old. And, you know, then when you get told we've accepted a bid 200 miles away, it's kind of like, it was massive. But, you know, I travelled down with my agent and my dad and, yeah, met the manager, Russell Slade, at the time, and met the owner, and he kind of, they were just telling, you know, setting out the vision of what's to come, really. Kind of just sold it to me, to be honest. I went back into Wolves the next day, spoke to Terry Connor, who was the assistant manager at the time, who obviously played for Brighton as well, and he just said to me that it's an amazing place to live and it'll be the best thing I'll do. It's time that I've got to make my own name in football, and, you know, looking back on my career now, that was probably the single biggest best decision I've made as a footballer was joining Brighton at that time.
Were there any other clubs interested in you at the time?
To be honest, not that I know of. At that time, I was only young, like 18, 19. All I cared about was playing football. I wasn't interested in contracts, where I'm going to be going. All I knew was just playing football. I felt so lucky that I had the chance to play with Bury in League Two on loan. Just loved my time there. Loved playing on a Saturday in front of fans. And, you know, then to get the call off my agent to say that the Brighton had a bid accepted, obviously it was an incredible feeling. And like I said before, it's the best decision, single best decision I've made in football.
I mean, it's really nice to hear that Terry Connors had a hand in the move because, I mean, he was a bit of a hero here.
Yeah, he just told me how much he loved it. Kind of said it was the making of him and his wife at the time as well, moving away. And, you know, I was with my wife at the time as well, with my girlfriend back then. And, you know, it was a massive, massive move for her as well, leaving all her family and friends to kind of follow my dream with me, really. And I think that was, I owe a lot to Brighton and the other way, not just in football, but, you know, in my life off the pitch as well. It's really cemented, you know, my relationship with my wife now, and we've got two lovely children as well. So,
yeah. Well, given what Molyneux was like, was then and is now, you know, this sort of huge stadium with much tradition and history. Give us your first impressions of coming to Brighton. One, as the city, but two, as the club. I mean, it must have been a bit of a culture shock as well, never mind the distance.
Yeah, it was different. They actually, funnily enough, they didn't show me the stadium.
Textbook.
They actually took me to the training ground, which at the time was at the university. and then explain that across the road there's going to be this beautiful stadium, and we're just going through all the process at the minute. And I was like, oh wow, yeah, that's going to sounds great. And but to be honest, like, because I'd been on loan at Bury the year before, I'd kind of got used to not being at Wolves, not seeing the, you know, the training ground at Wolves. And I was coming through and everything was amazing. You know, you're getting your kit washed, you go in, you get your kit, all the things like that. And then, you know, I went up to, on loan to Bury, and that was really, it was worse than Brighton, to be honest. Getting changed at the stadium, walking down to a park to train, and oh, we can't train there today. They haven't cut the council lane, cut the grass. And, you know what I mean? It was quite, that was a real culture shock. And, you know, so it wasn't too much of a shock coming to Brighton. And, you know, the chairman and everyone at the club kind of sold the vision of what they were trying to achieve. And that really enticed me. It was something I really wanted to be part of.
But the club was in a bit of a strange situation at the moment. We're in the crux of changing from Dick Knight to Tony Bloom, and the stadium was in the process of not quite being built when you joined, but it wasn't, the first bricks were probably being ready to be laid. It must have been, I mean, they must have said, this is the dream, this is where we're going to be.
Yeah, that's what sold it to me, to be honest. I signed a 3-year contract with the view of, you know, that was the aim. The aim was to, by the end of that contract, that they wanted to be in the Championship, in this beautiful new stadium, a really progressive club, and the chairman had those visions. And I think, you know, it's mad to think that everything that he kind of said to me back in 2009, mm-hmm. they've come true. 12 years later, he's been a fantastic custodian of Brighton for the fans, give you an amazing stadium, amazing training facilities, and left a legacy that will live with Brighton now for, you know, forever.
So what about the city itself? I mean, what did you make of the city? Was there, you know, sort of anything you thought, you know, was the sea this sort of amazing thing, or was there anything about the culture or the, you know, about the place, or did you not get much chance to explore?
Amazing. Love Brighton. So many different people. Coming from where I've come from, you know, all I knew was the people from my area. And, you know, coming down to Brighton, where you get such a mix and different, you know, different cultures, everything was, it was just different. Living by the sea as well, that was incredible. First time I had the chance to just be near the sea and not have to go 2 hours to Barmouth Beach in Wales. So that was quite a novelty. Yeah, you know, I hold Brighton, you know, it was one of my favourite places to live. Absolutely love my time down there, and particularly the city and the people. Really, really enjoyed it.
Well, your debut didn't go too well. I mean, we were playing against Stockport, which actually a team featuring a few of your future teammates, actually. But we lost 4-2. Liam Bridcut was sent off, actually, that day for Stockport. Gary Dicker was in their side. I mean, that season under Russell Slade, I mean, it was a team developing. There was a few interesting signings in that side as well. But you were certainly one that really stood out, and you certainly caught the supporters' attention.
To be honest, I signed off the back of I think it might have been 7-1, 5-1 or 7-1 against Huddersfield. I actually got invited to the game by the chairman and the manager. Before I signed, said, you know, come and watch a game, someone see how we play and things. And yeah, do you know what? I'd already made my mind up. I was signing, and me and my dad in the car on the way back, we just said, like, look, we've never had anything, you know, easy in our lives. Like, it's not like we've been brought up, you know, in a certain way. It's we've got everything we've got, we've managed to get back to fight for. And you can't just turn your back on one performance because of, you know, but I think it was Adam Alab that got sent off, actually, funnily enough, which probably doesn't surprise you too much. I'm delighted with the decision. And, you know, I've obviously massive thank you to Russell Slade for showing faith in me and bringing me down to Brighton, really.
The changes, I mean, that season was kind of like treading water. It didn't necessarily go too well. And Gus Poyet did come in eventually. And he changed everything around. And that game at Southampton, that first game he had in charge, kind of sent shockwaves around the football world. A, that Gus had come to a team like Brighton. But what that performance it changed where we were overnight, kind of.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's, I think that performance really it made people stand up and take notice that, you know, Brighton were serious about the things they were talking about, the stadium. I think it shown, you know, what the owner's vision was, and people could actually start to see that he meant what he was going to do. It wasn't just an owner that comes in and talks about stuff that, you know. First of all, the signing of a name like Gus Poyet, I mean, when we heard that he was coming in, I was in awe, shocked, to be honest, because he's a player that obviously I'd have grown up watching, Match of the Days, Volley, you know, the clubs he played for, and then he's coming to manage us in League One, and we were like, wow, how can you not respect and listen to this man? And straight away he came in, he thought it was ridiculous, we were rushing our own kit, kind of did that, just made it a lot more... more professional, made it, you know, and he kind of set out straight away, look, we're going to have a good laugh, but while we're training, 90 minutes, concentrate, listen.
I mean, do you think the squad was a little bit out of shape character-wise before Gus came in?
Yeah, I think it was, don't get me wrong, listen, there was some but maybe not as professional and as it needed to be, and Gus demanded that from the minute he walked through the door. And if he wasn't on board with that, then you know you were out, and he was fine with that. And, you know, if you don't want to be on board with it, that's cool. He went out and got his own players, and from the moment he came in, it just clicked. Just clicked, and I finished that season really, really strongly. Going into the next season, and it was incredible.
So, Elliot, can you give us a flavour of when you... I mean, you're talking about when Russell signed you and how the club sold the vision to you, but can you give us a flavour of what's the difference between what Russell asked of you and what Gus asked of you when he arrived?
In terms of playing?
Yeah.
So, like, Russell was good with me. He just told me to be positive. He said, you know, he's watched my games and just wanted me to be a winger, really. You know, kind of old school, old fashioned, go down the line, cross the ball in, get my shots off if I can, how many crosses can I put in the box, that sort of thing. And Gus kind of came in, and it was the first time that I'd worked under a manager that had this kind of European feel to the way he managed, the way he wanted us to play. It wasn't all about just running down the wing, crossing the ball, having different ways of playing. I mean, I remember playing under him, and we play like 4-3-1 wide winger, no one on the other side, two strikers because we wanted someone up with Glenn Murray. It was just like a really different way of thinking, and it definitely grew my football intelligence massively because I was having to think about what I was doing in a team structure as opposed to just thinking, well, when I get the ball, run down the line, cross it in, I've done my job. He brought everyone together, and it was a process, and everyone in that team was just a cog in the process. Mm. So some of the players they might not have got the credit that a Muzza got, or I might have got from my assist that season, or whatever it was. Everyone in that team had their role, and if we all knew that if one person didn't do it, the whole thing broke down. And it was very much based on everyone, not just individuals, which was, you know, I've kind of carried that with me through my career now, and I think, you know, Gus kind of instilled that in me, really, that it needs everyone to work in harmony to produce something great.
But that team, we did see a turnover of players, and we saw better players coming in. And there was a game, I mean, we're going to talk to you about a certain game at Walsall in a bit, but there was another one at Walsall which... And we saw Marcus Painter and Inigo Calderon make their debuts in the snow, I think it was, as well. absolutely freezing there that day. And two cracking goals from Forster and Murray. But I mean, that was under Gus. And we just saw what Corday and Painter were different to the fullbacks we'd had previously.
Yeah, they were massive. Corday was outstanding. Paint as well. Really, really good lad. And they kind of just bought straight into what the gaffer wanted. He'd obviously seen the attributes in them, brought them into the club, and then they just fit in with the group great. Obviously, Corday had been, he hadn't played anywhere. Do you know what I mean? Did he get released by Gillingham, or did had a trial there, didn't work out, or
yeah, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, and then he comes to us, and it was like, that's what we're missing, that's what we needed, and he came, and everything the gaffer said, he just listened to and implemented, and he understood that he was part of this cog and he needed to do these certain things for it all to work. And I think the signing of Gordon was huge. Really, really, really big signing.
Tell us about that. Go on, tell us, you know, because, you know, there's our captain, there's our skipper, but, you know, like you say, everyone else gets the credit. Tell us about what the skipper was like.
He's a lovely man. Obviously, you've seen, you've met him and things like that, but he is an intimidating character somehow. with them beautiful good looks, somehow he's intimidating.
Is he a footballer, you know, or a rock star?
I think he could do both.
At the same time.
I've got to say that, and he could do them both well as well, otherwise he'd beat me up. He had this like presence about him, very authoritative. We, like I said before, we had quite a lot of fun, a lot of jokers in the group, and he was part of that. But he also implemented straight away the gaffer's kind of mantra of, listen, while we come to work, we'll have a great time, we'll have a good laugh, but for 90 minutes every day, all I ask of you is your full attention, because we play 90 minutes on a Saturday, so I need you for 90 minutes every day, full attention on what we're doing. And Gordon kind of, sometimes if training was sloppy, Gordon wouldn't need the gaffer to say anything. Gordon would be bang straight on it. If Gordon wasn't happy with what something's going on, bang straight on it. And I think we needed that leader, that man figure in the dressing room to kind of keep everything going, really, and take it onto the pitch what the gaffer wanted. And Gordon was that man.
Yeah, I mean, that season was, absolutely wonderful for us to watch. But I mean, there was a game away at Plymouth where we won 2-0, and there was just a sense in the squad that, you know, if we win this, we go top. We go joint top. Just might just be for like 24 hours, but we go top.
Yeah, I think with each game that was going, we were getting more and more confident, and then things started to come out about, oh, we're not going to last the pace. Can you keep up? All that kind of stuff. And it was a bit like, within the group, we knew what we had going, what we were building was really special. And I think the way we went about that season, we were really happy that people weren't talking about us in that way until the very end. You know what I mean? It took quite a while for people to be like, they're serious about what they're doing here. And I think that helped us really, because we didn't have no pressure. There was Southampton, Huddersfield, and all these teams, everyone was talking about them. Well, we were just going about our business with class. We weren't shouting about what we were doing, but we were going onto the pitch and saying, we can beat anyone. And even if we lost the game or drew a game, it wasn't because we weren't better. It was something might have happened in the game, a mistake. But each and every game, we felt like we've got a way to win. It doesn't matter what they do, we're going to win.
It's clearly a side that was greater than the sum of its parts. I mean, like I say, some of the bigger clubs had the big name players. They had the budgets and what have you. And this was a relatively new team, not cobbled together. And it was clearly carefully put together. But, you know, there were no, with all due respect, sort of shining stars. There were third division players that actually, when you got them together, played way above their individual merits, yeah?
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I mean about what Gus kind of brought. Along with Tano and Charlie Oatway, we almost all knew that we haven't got one star, there's not a standout person. We all need to be part of this machine for it to work. And if the machine wins, everyone within it wins. It's not about an individual. It's not about, you know, how many players from that squad have gone on to play in the Premier League and do, you know, not with Brighton, but that's gone on to amazing things in their career. And that's all off the back of everyone understanding what was required that season for us to do well for Brighton.
A few of them are still there. But I mean, so 25th of September 2010, something happened. It was in the 93rd minute. A guy with a long face, long hair.
Being rude.
The horse.
Is that what you called him?
No, we didn't, but that's what I've called him ever since.
So Fran Sandaza puts us top of the table in September and we stayed there.
Beautiful sunny day at Withdean.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. And the weird thing is that no one can remember the first goal.
I can't either. I can't either, but yeah. See, what you've just said there, September to the end of the season, top of the league, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's absolute class. Listen, we're not going to go through every single game, but I just want to sort of like a broad overview of your view of the season. So, there's the kind of the mid-season disruption personally for you that I want to get to in a minute. But let's start on the more positive note. Do you have a memory of a particular game, any given game, whether league or cup, of that season there was a personal triumph for you? One where you thought, I really enjoyed myself, or I really outshone myself, or one where you thought, Christ, I was man of the match for three games there. You know, was there any that really thought, yeah, that was really good for you personally?
Not on a personal note, not one game that I'd say, oh, I was brilliant that day, but I think for me, the best one, and still to this day, one of the best team performances I've been involved in was Peterborough away. Game was one of the most enjoyable, and they were a team again fighting up there with us. That's one of the most enjoyable games of football I've ever had the pleasure of being involved in.
You were magnificent that day, absolutely unplayable that day, and it was. I mean, the fact that you won two penalties, one of which we missed, and Joe Lewis in the Peterborough goal that day. I mean, he must have hated you because, I mean, you peppered the shot with goals. You were just putting it on a plate for people. I mean, if we'd have won that 9 or 10-0, it would not have flattered us. I mean,
what I enjoyed most about it. It was like that game was a culmination of everything we've been working on, everything we've done, all coming together on that one day without any mistakes, really. It was just, everything worked for us.
I mean, and they were. Admittedly, they were down to 10 men, which some.
Well, that's their problem.
A dampener on it, but I mean, and they were calling it their cup final prior to that game, but
yeah.
I mean, it was just a magnificent performance, and Al, you're gonna have to get the bleep machine out, but you were fucking brilliant.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Do you remember that? I mean, as much as, you know, we don't try to encourage swearing on this show, do you remember the chant from that game? That's where it started.
Was it, we are fucking brilliant?
Yeah.
Yeah, loved it. That must have gone for half an hour.
Yeah.
It sounded like going on for half an hour.
Yeah. It started at that game.
And it's true, though, like, that day we were.
I'm not sure that Gus should have been singing it in front of the seafront, to be honest, but he did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's superb. And like I say, Ady, you're not making, and actually, Elliot, you're not making me feel any better because, like I say, that was one of the few games I missed that season. And thanks, mate. Yeah, just, you know. But let's move forward to sort of like the end of the calendar year, and your performances were attracting attention, and. I know it's still sort of 10 years ago, and I hope it doesn't open too many wounds, but, you know, it probably was a disruption that neither you nor the club could have done with when Norwich sort of came sniffing around for you.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was a it was a strange one, a really, really strange time, because prior to the interest and stuff, I hadn't, like I said before, I was just so happy to be playing football. You know, felt so honoured to be playing, you know, particularly in such a great team, doing well. I wasn't focused on any moves or where I might go. I was fully focused on, let's get promoted, right, and let's get into the Championship. Let me have a crack at the Championship now. We're doing really well in League One. Let's finish what we started. And then, of course, like, the interest kind of got really strong. There was quite a few bids went in, and I'm not saying I didn't get pressured into doing anything, but it got to a stage where the kind of the money that Norwich were offering me, my agent, it didn't seem real to me, to be honest. Like, I'm just an idiot from Telford. Do you know what I mean? I'm just a normal guy that's got lucky, managed to, you know, make it to professional football, and someone's wanting to pay more than £1 million for me. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, wow, they must really like me. And then, you know, I think looking back on it, I don't regret anything, because everything happens for a reason, and things have gone on since that maybe happened because of that. But one thing I can say is I am really, really glad that Tony Bloom didn't allow me to go. Met me in person, which I thought was top quality, something that I hold really dear now, and why I've still got so much love for the family and for the club, and sat down and said to me, look, we brought you here for this, to go where we're going, stay here, finish this project with us, get us, you know, help get us promoted, and I, man to man, will shake your hand now and say that if we get promoted and Norwich get promoted to the Premier League and they want you still, I promise you that I will sell you to Norwich. And we shook hands that day. I don't know if many people know that. We shook hands that day in his office. I said, Mr. Chairman, I promise I will do everything I can to help this football club. And he said, well, I'll stick by my word if that happens. If not, we'll be in the Championship together. And I said, great. Walked out of that room. Never thought about the move again. Didn't think about it, because he categorically called it off. And, you know, the rest is history, really.
Did the fans chanting at Watford make a difference at all?
Yeah, massively. Because I was really, you know, I think I was only 20 or 21 at the time. That really, really, because I'd built up such a good rapport with the fans, that was the one thing that would have hurt me the most, to be honest. You know, forget not getting a move. We just spoke about what, you know, that situation. I think the fact that the fans at Watford, I think it might have been a day later or 2 days later, I was on the bench, went to warm up, I was thinking, oh no, what's happening here? And the fact that they sung my name, just showed me all the love that they'd shown me since I signed, I think that was massive for me, and it made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, to be honest. Yeah. The fact that people still had my back, even though I'd, you know, on the face of it, I'd done something that was kind of a slap in the face to them, really.
We were desperate for you to stay, and I think most football fans understand the nature of football and the fact that we know what the money on offer could be, we know what the transfer fees could be, and you know, at the time we were with Dean, I know we're moving into a new stadium and the backing was better than it had been financially to a certain degree. But we understand what footballers they want to play at the top of the game, and you're being given an opportunity to play at the top of the game, and the fact that we wanted you to stay, I mean, we didn't expect that to sway any decision. So the fact that Tony intercepted and gave you that promise, I mean, that must have been massive.
When we had that chat, to be honest with you, I never thought about it again. And that's me being genuinely honest, because I thought, well, look, they've got two choices now. I can't control what Norwich do, but I can control what I do for this team. And if I can be a big influence in getting promoted, great. I'll be playing in the Championship, which is what I was, you know, trying to leave to do anyway, to Norwich, because they were in the Championship at the time. You know, the chances of, if Norwich got promoted, are they still going to want me? Maybe not. I've never played in the Championship. So the chances are, you know, there's not many players that go from League One, never play the Championship game ever and go straight to the Premier League. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. So to be honest with you, I never really expected that bit to happen. But what I thought I can do is control myself and trying to be a positive influence on Brighton. And you know, from that, from the minute we shook hands on that day, my focus was solely on doing all I could to try and help Brighton get in the Championship. And if so, trying to sign a longer contract to play for Brighton in the Amex.
Yeah, well, you did go the game after. You went on. You scored a brilliant goal at Bristol Rovers, and your celebration showed exactly how much it meant to you.
Yeah, because it was. I never fell out. It wasn't like sometimes you hear a transfer request and players have just fell out of love with a club or they really want to leave. It wasn't that. Wasn't the reason. The reason was literally, I might never get this chance to go. I might never play in the Championship. I've never had to experience it. I've played in League Two for a few seasons, played in League One. And, you know, all I ever wanted as a kid is to test myself at the highest possible level. And when that opportunity arose, maybe I tried to jump at it too soon. And, you know, thankfully everything happened the way it happened. And yeah. I kind of didn't have to play in the Championship until a bit later on.
Yeah, because you went straight to the Premier League and you excelled. Yeah. I mean, that goal at Spurs, come on.
Yeah, but it was too rare that. listen, I've loved every minute of my career, all the clubs I've been at, and you know, I've been lucky and fortunate enough to make one appearance in the Premier League, let alone, you know, more than 50, which is, you know, that's beyond my wildest dreams, to be honest. So yeah. You know, of course, it's been an honour to have done that, but you know, you always want more.
How can you put into words? I mean, obviously, once things settle down, like you say, you put that sort of non-move or the postponed move behind you. How do you feel about sort of kind of how the rest of the season went? Because by that time, you know, the start that the club had made, we're over halfway into the season. We're now sort of, once you get to sort of 15, 20 games to go, you realise, right, now the pressure's on us. And I imagine that the pressure kind of was now building from within. So how did you guys cope? How did you enjoy that second half of the season with the pressure that you'd actually now put upon yourselves?
I think we just trusted in the processes that we'd been working on throughout the season. We didn't do anything different. We didn't train different. We still had, you know, our fun time. Serious training sessions, and by that time we weren't having to work on what we were going to do, because we all knew what we were going to do. We all knew that if a team was playing a certain way, this is how we win today, and if a team plays that way and changes that way, this is how we do it. Kind of Gus had kind of two or three tweaks in a game that we all knew that if they're doing that, that's what we've got to do to swing it in our favour. And everyone knew the job, even the players that weren't starting, that were coming in, they knew the job. So, if Gus had to change a few players, they already knew. Everyone knew and by that point, we built that much of a relationship with individuals. So, me and Calde, for instance, Gary Dicker and Bridcut, they just, everyone kind of had their own little partnerships all over the pitch. And it just worked. And by that stage, we all knew each other, what we were doing, what we had to do. So it kind of, the pressure didn't feel like we were coming on. We were then just enjoying what we'd earned, which was being top of the league, enjoying having points, buffers and stuff like that, and going and taking on the next challenge and thinking, let's get this done. Let's keep going. Let's get this done as soon as we can and enjoy it.
Well, we did that. But I mean, it did help that we had 8 games in 29 days in March, and
we won them all.
5 of them were by a 1-goal margin. It was, you know, it was a case of, you know, we'd had a certain style of play, but that month it was more about grinding out the results and getting ourselves over the line, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think at certain stages of the season, you have to kind of give up style for substance. And we've done so well stylistically and getting points on the board. But when it comes to, like you said, 8 games in March, that 8 games can be the unravelling of everything you've done at the beginning, or catapult you into, you're almost there. Yeah. Thankfully, it was the latter for us, and we won the eight, and I don't know how many points more we needed to go up, but I can't imagine it would have been many.
Speaking of the game, we won 4-3, Benno. Dagenham at home, where we sealed the promotion.
What a night.
Benno, if you remember that night, you weren't there.
I remember it by picture recollection only.
The thing I remember about that, I mean, by all means, tell us your story, but the thing I've got to say about you, because I think they picked up on Football Focus, was, you know, they're all doing the player interviews before you all go off and get mongolised. and they turned the camera on to Kasper Ankergren, and he said something banally sort of football, you know, and you just turned to him and said...
Bore off, Kasper.
Brilliant. Bore off, Kasper, we just got promotion. He looked at you as if he said, shall I get my cock out and stick out my nose? But, yeah. So tell us, listen, we've already talked about the game in a very recent podcast, but tell us about what you can remember about the celebrations maybe into, well, it was a Tuesday night, so it probably went on to what, Thursday morning?
Oh, it was wild, incredible. Just celebrating on the pitch, really. Fans coming on, that was the first bit, and then straight into, everyone was like, well, what do we do? So we're thinking, we didn't plan anything, and it was just everyone who was there, your friends, family, we're all piled into Brighton, and we all just bundled down there, and the rest I can't even remember, to be honest. I think we were singing songs, and that it was incredible night.
But moving on from there, there was a trophy to be won, and we did win it at Walsall, and you put the icing on the cake.
That was a beauty, mate.
Yeah, and that's still up there with one of my favourite goals. She spoke to my mum, she says that's her favourite goal that I've ever scored. I had, obviously, being at Walsall with mum, my family, my wife, my wife's family. Like, I can't even remember how many tickets I got. It was just a special, special day. We'd worked so hard all season. I think, getting promoted is what the aim was. But when we'd done so well and been so good all season, I think we owed it to ourselves and the fans that we really go and show that we were the best team in the league that year. And you know, we did that in style.
But there's a thing at the Amex called the Memory Lane, and there was a load of pictures. There's one of you up there with a quote about us being homeless and you bringing us home to the Amex. Yeah. And
I've seen the flag, to be fair.
Yeah.
When I've been back since, I have seen it. Do you know what, things like that? That's what makes me love the club so much. I think. All the success now, amazing facilities. The club never, in my opinion, is never going to, and it hasn't, forgotten where it's come from. It hasn't forgotten about all the hard times, everything that's gone on before. Just because you're enjoying the amazing success that you're getting now, which I couldn't be happier for. I think the fact that it's so deep-rooted with all the harder times, the things that have been done to get the club to where it's at now, it's a lot more appreciated than just being, you're in the Premier League and you get bought by a billionaire and he spends 500 million and you become a really good team. It's been a longer process, and a process that's been built up on the back of loyalty of fans travelling to Gillingham. All that sort of stuff makes the club what it is today. It's not, doesn't think it's anything it's not. It recognises where it's come from and it's got a vision for where it's going. And that's the biggest tribute I could have paid to Brighton, I think.
Elliot, I think you've just completely and utterly nailed it. I think that's how we all feel, and that's a brilliant time to leave it. So thank you to you, Elliot Bennett. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar podcast special. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again very soon.
Heartbeat, why do you miss when my baby kisses me? Does a love kiss stay in my memory? Little pat, I know that new love thrills me. Skip beat sign.